Breaking ranks.
I think we need to know what happened here. Why was this Capitol not protected?
The House vote to investigate includes two South Florida Republicans.
Jackpot! Tribal Gaming wins the vote.
The tribe takes the risk. It is still committed to pay to the state of Florida.
Opponents vow the game isn't over.
We don't want it here. We don't want it in Miami. We don't want it in South Florida.
When we legalize more gambling within a state, we also increase the amount of illegal gambling.
And liftoff. Shooting for the stars.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. Administrator.
Florida's former senator and one-time astronaut takes the reins at NASA.
It's all this week, all live this week in South Florida.
Good morning. Glad you could join us. I'm Michael Putnam.
I'm Glenna Milberg, and we begin with a push in Congress for a commission to investigate the violent breach of the Capitol on January 6th. The resolution to investigate the assault passed the House with this session's largest bipartisan vote. That said, only 35 Republicans joined all Democrats in voting to create the commission, and that includes two of South Florida's three Republican members of Congress, Carlos Jimenez and Maria Salazar.
Congressman Jimenez is live with us now this morning via Skype. Congressman, welcome. Great to see you. How are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you, Michael? How are you doing?
We are excellent. Thanks. Congressman, let's just sort of get to the bottom line here. You voted for the independent investigation of the assault on the Capitol. Why did you vote yes on that?
Well, about less than a month after the January 6th, there was a Republican representative, Rodney Davis, put forward a bill very similar to what was finally agreed upon, and I signed on to it. And it called for an independent panel of five appointees by Republicans, five appointees by Democrats. The subpoena powers were limited to those that both sides agreed to. And at the end, there's going to be a report which the majority of this 10-member panel will have to agree to. That's a pretty bipartisan group of folks. And so I want to get to the bottom of how it was that the Capitol was breached. I've been an incident commander. I've been a fire chief. I've been mayor of Miami-Dade County on major incidents. And what I saw there was a real failure of incident command. A real failure to take into account the intelligence that they probably had, that some members there were going to try to do something like this. And so we need to get to the bottom of it. How did it happen, and make sure it never happens again?
So you are looking to find out why intelligence, why preparation wasn't there. Does that also include questions about who instigated, who was involved? Along with what did they know and when did they know it? Is that more comprehensive? Because that's the part that seems to be pretty controversial to mm-hmm. Republicans.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure that a lot of people say, well, it was the president that instigated. Well, I know for a fact that there were people there at 9 o'clock in the morning ready to storm the Capitol way before the president even spoke. So I don't think it had anything to do with the president. There were people that had planned this, I believe, people that instigated some folks that really hadn't thought about storming the Capitol and then got caught up in it. And so there were people in there that did that. But again, what I saw there was a lack of a response on the part of Capitol Police. And I'm not putting the finger of blame on the good men and women of Capitol Police. What I am putting the finger on is the leadership. And I have real serious doubts about the leadership of the Capitol Police. Capitol Police is and its leadership. It's actually kind of governed by a five-member board. The Sergeant of Arms of the House and the Senate, which are appointed by the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader. And so, I want to know what the heck happened. Who knew what, and why certain things? Why were precautions were not taken? And then once this thing started getting out of hand, how come they didn't get it back in hand? It just seems to me that there was a really lack of a lot of safeguards there. And I want to make sure this never happens again because, this is the people's house. And that should never happen. This is the symbol of America. And the symbol of America should never be violated like that.
Yeah. Congressman, as you well know, right after the vote, and you were one, as we said earlier of 35 Republicans who voted for the investigation. Former President Trump issued a statement. Here is a printout of it. It says briefly, see 35 wayward Republicans. They just can't help themselves. We have much better policy and are much better for the country. But the Democrats stick together. Republicans don't. They don't have the Romneys, Little Ben Sassies, and the Cheneys of the world. Unfortunately, we do. Now, you're not mentioned by name here, but he is talking about the 35 Republicans. So are you sort of on his hit list now, on former President Trump's hit list?
I don't think so. I mean, I've had disagreements with policies. I've been a supporter of the president's, and I think by and large, the vast majority of his policies were good for America. You know, what's happening right now, I am totally against most of the things that President Biden is doing. You know, the $6 trillion in spending and basically putting our kids and grandchildren, you know, in debt for generations to come. A lot of the things, you know, that he's doing, I am against. The Green New Deal, support of stacking the Supreme Court. There's so many things here I'm against. And I've been very consistent in my votes. Every once in a while, you know, I will cross the line and vote with the Democrats. You know, what's interesting is you have me here because I voted, you know, I crossed the lines. You haven't had any Democrats here in this session because they haven't crossed the line. And it's been very, very partisan.
Yeah, well, if I may say, I think we only said that you voted on in a bipartisan way, not that you crossed the line. We're not making any judgments about how you voted.
Cross the line, you know, Michael, when I say cross the line, I'm talking about voting in a bipartisan way. And so, really, I've only seen Democrats. I mean, the last vote on funding this commission, we saw the first time that I saw some Democrats start to, you know, basically buck, you know, Nancy Pelosi and the party. And it was interesting because it was the squad that did it. But by and large, the Democrats, and the president is right, have been, you know, straight down the line, which is rather unfortunate. And it shows you the kind of iron grip that Nancy Pelosi has on her party. And unfortunately, also the iron grip that the far left has on the party. Look, I just sponsored a resolution that called Hamas a terrorist organization, reaffirms our commitment to Israel, and also, you know, is condemning anti-Semitism around the world. I got about 80 of my colleagues on the Republican side, you know, sign up as co-sponsors. I have yet to get a Democrat co-sponsor. Amazing. It's amazing what's going on.
Congressman, we are in some divided times, and I want you to know that we are with you all about bipartisanship. I want to go back to something you said before. You mentioned the January 6th in the morning, you were in your hotel lobby with your chief of staff, Alex Farrow. What you said about that morning all of a sudden is getting all kinds of headlines and attention this week, except you said it 4 months ago sitting right here. Well, you weren't sitting here. We were looking at you on Skype. But you said, you told the story of being in the hotel lobby. It wasn't, if I remember correctly, it wasn't you that heard what these people who were in helmets and tactical gear in the lobby had to say. It was Alex, your chief of staff, who thought that they said they were going to storm the FBI headquarters, and you reported that to the FBI. Do you expect that to be part of, if, you know, the commission may not happen because of the U.S. Senate, but let's say it goes forward. Is that something that you will feel important? Will Alex be testifying? What is the context of that, do you think?
Well, I think the big uproar is that instead of saying lobby, I said room. And so people said, hey, I have instigators in my room all morning before it happened. And no, it was the lobby. It wasn't my room. Okay. My wife would have never allowed a bunch of people in my room. Okay. So, but by and large, you know, I did tell that story, you know, months ago. And then I mentioned it on CNN the other day and said room, and that caused a little stir, but then got cleared up and they hadn't heard about it. And yeah, things like that need to come out. If in fact, look, I know for a fact that Alex Farrell told the FBI and the Capitol Police at 9 o'clock in the morning that, hey, what he heard was, hey, we got this guy in riot gear and talking to these other guys saying that they're going to storm the FBI at 2 o'clock. Well, it happens that the Capitol was stormed at 2 o'clock. So maybe instead of the FBI, it was the Capitol. But they should have known that something was happening and that there were instigators in the crowd.
Just okay, like so to your point, wouldn't that, this very story, wouldn't that make it so important to also figure out What group instigated this? They had t-shirts made. This was organized. Wouldn't it be just as important to figure out who planned it, who instigated it, who might have fueled it, and how that happened along with the security breaches?
Oh, I agree 100%. Look, let me go back to when I was mayor and we had those disturbances a year ago, right? And not disturbances, really, they were protests, but we knew that there were instigators there. We had the intelligence that there were instigators in there. And so we took the measures necessary to make sure that, hey, we'll protect your right to protest, but we're not going to protect your right to violate the law. And so we took strong measures. People tested us, and they weren't successful. The same thing should have happened at the Capitol. You know, there were instigators there. There were people that were going to cause trouble. The vast majority of the people there were not going to be there to cause trouble. Some were, and that's what happened. But, you know, knowing that, we should have taken I'm saying the Capitol Police and law enforcement agencies in Washington, D.C., should have taken appropriate steps to make sure it didn't happen.
It appears
that they have a lack of communications. I don't know how their incident command system worked. There were reports that the National Guard was offered and rejected. Why? So all of those things need to be investigated.
We understand. All right, stay where you are. We want to talk about Hamas and Israel in the Middle East. Get your views on that. So everyone, keep your places. We'll be back with Carlos Jimenez in just a minute. We are talking live with Congressman Carlos Jimenez. Congressman, let's talk about Israel and the Palestinians. I was in Aventura Wednesday night at a pro-Israel rally. I heard your very strong remarks in favor of Israel, its right to defend itself. There are some Democrats and supporters of Israel who have said its use of force in the attacks was disproportionate, that they struck too hard. What's your view on that?
Look, I mean, you have to strike hard in order to disincentivize, you know, any future attacks. If you just go lightly and go back, thank you for launching, you know, thousands of rockets into Israel, I'm just going to go give you a little love tap. That doesn't work. I mean, this is what's called cutting the grass in Israel. What happens is Hamas, you know, gets support and gets supplied by Iran. These rockets are all Iranian rockets. Then they feel that they are strong militarily. Then they launch these rockets. Israel comes in and then degrades their military, you know, capability, and then we have a ceasefire. So this is, you know, one of those things that's happening. What we have to do as a country is to stand strong with Israel. If we don't stand strong with Israel, we are inviting more violence. We have to show strength. We have to show that we're with them. And that's why, you know, I will always be with Israel. I'm condemning Hamas as a terrorist organization. Any organization that launches indiscriminately thousands of rockets into civilian areas, mainly just to cause civilian casualties, in my eye, is a terrorist organization. Israel is very measured in its response, trying to strike military targets. But then Hamas uses their own children and women, hospitals and schools as shields and puts their military hardware either in them or right next to them. And so, you know, who's the bad guy here? And it's unfortunate that some people in Congress haven't figured that out yet, and now start saying that Israel is an apartheid nation and that we should be supporting Hamas and Hezbollah. I will never support Hamas and Hezbollah. I will always be and always stand by Israel.
Congressman, I want to bring it back to Washington for just the last minute and a half or so that we have with you. After the vote to impeach President Trump in January, you defended your colleague Liz Cheney's vote. You did not think that, you actually said she voted her conscience, you supported her, you didn't think that she should leave her leadership position. Of course, now she has been voted out of her leadership position by her party. And it was done on a voice vote, so your constituents don't know how you voted. Will you tell them?
Look, it was done inside and it's a secret ballot, but I will tell you this. What most people think the reason why Liz Cheney lost her leadership position is not because of what of her vote. Liz Cheney needed to move on. We need to now focus on what's happening right now with the Biden administration. And our message is very clear. You know, what's happening at the border, what's happening with inflation, what's happening with gas prices, what's happened right now with Israel. What's going to happen with the Green New Deal? All those things are the things that we need to talk about. What happened on January 6th, you know, it'll be investigated and all that. But as the leader, as one of our leaders, we really should be focusing in on what the Biden administration is doing.
So we'll focus on all of those things, but how did you vote?
That was a secret vote, so I'm not going to tell anybody how I vote. But you can tell that I understand the reasons why she lost her leadership position.
Congressman Carlos Jimenez, sorry, go ahead.
See, if we don't have a script, we talk together. Great to have you, as always, and thank you. There is, to your point, so much to talk about, and you will be back soon, I hope.
Okay, thank you, and look forward to coming back whenever you want.
Thank you very much.
All right, next, the state's largest expansion of gambling ever. It's all but a done deal.
A closer look with lawmakers just back from Tallahassee and voting on it when we come back.
This week, lawmakers dealt a winning hand to the governor and most, especially the Seminole Tribe of Florida. The new gaming compact is the biggest expansion of gambling in state history in return for some $6 billion over the 30-year life of the compact.
And the compact gives the tribe a monopoly on craps and roulette at its casinos. The big takeaway, though, is its ability to run a sports book, online sports betting, including placing bets by your phone. And that sets up a protracted legal battle, plus all this needs to be approved by the federal government.
We're going to hear from a lawmaker who voted against the compact, but first, State Representative Chip LaMarca of Lighthouse Point, who is a point person on the framing of the bill and voted for it. Good morning to you. Great to have you.
Representative LaMarca, good morning.
Good morning to you both, and congrats on your new puppies, Glenna.
Thank you. They kept me up all night. They're so cute. Thanks. Okay, let's start then with this was a speedy thing for the special session. There were some interesting maneuverings, and right off the bat, Representative, online gaming, the possibility of online casinos went away. That was a non-starter for so many. Frame for us the familiar opposition to gambling expansion, aside from the legal, is moral, social, and economic. What did you face, and how did you get past those so quickly?
So for me, this was a simple economic, presentation based on what the Seminole Tribe could or could not do on their property. And that's the expansion piece that we talk about. So that was not within the framework of Amendment 3. And, that moving forward is an excellent deal. If the governor did a great job as far as guaranteeing $2.5 billion in the first 5 years and $6 billion by 2030 with the tribe. And that was really to kind of put back together the compact that had fallen apart. From a standpoint of the sports wagering piece, we don't know if that will hold up in court from a standpoint of being mobile, but I proposed a bill that would allow safe and regulated sports wagering in Florida. My biggest issue with anything in Florida is if things are happening here, whether it's legal or illegal, if it's legal in another state and the money's going to another state or territory like sports wagering, I had a problem with that, just similar to the online sales tax issue. So for me, it's all about economics, and as long as we're continuing to make the property around the tribe's casinos safe by including our resources there, then I think that's one of the most important things we can do is try to allow them to grow their business at the same time keeping it safe.
Yeah. Representative, I don't know your inclinations or if you ever bet on anything, but let's say you were sitting at home a couple of months from now, if this holds up in court, and you're in Lighthouse Point, and you want to bet on a sports game, let's say a Dolphins game. If this is legal, you could pick up your cell phone and place a bet because, according to this compact, the bet would go through a server on tribal land. Mm. Now, that seems, frankly, like a kind of a fiction, simply an illusion. I mean, is this going to hold up?
Look, I think it's for the courts to decide, but from a standpoint of how we envision it. Look, the way that sports wagering is going on right now, again, legal or illegal in the state of Florida, there are servers and proxy servers, ways to get to do sports wagering that Florida's not collecting the revenue. From the standpoint of the other states that have legalized it, like New York, New Jersey, it happens on, you know, it obviously went to in some places a referendum, some places the legislature did it. For us, we would have to go back to the voters if we were going to do it separate from this.
So, Chip, one of the biggest fears is that this compact leaves open expansion in ways that is not allowed right now. Portability is the word. Mm-hmm. Taking a licensee can take a gaming license and move it somewhere else, a.k.a. Mm-hmm. the Trump Doral, a.k.a. the Fontainebleau. Those are the two biggest entities that really are in play right now. So it was very clear that wasn't going to happen in this session, but the compact leaves open the door, especially to those two properties, because it sets a 15-mile limit. Those two properties are just outside the 15-mile limit. How do you address people in the leadership of cities, the residents of cities that feel like they should have the Amendment 3 right to vote on expansion, and then they see that this is in the compact and leaves that door open? How do you address that?
Well, if I could real quickly just to touch one thing up on sports wagering, the bill I had presented to the legislature this year, should this be thrown out in federal court, I believe we can come back with it. And this rides the guardrails of Amendment 3 and the expansion of gaming. So that being said, with respect to portability and moving permits, a good friend of mine is going to be on here, a member from the Democrat Party, Nick Duran. And I know he had mentioned this in some of his conversations on the floor. I don't believe that A will happen, number one. I think there was conversations about both the Trump Doral and Fontainebleau. Those conversations, if we think about it, certainly for the Fontainebleau have gone back to the 1950s. I believe very strongly in local government. I believe that both the leaders of, for example, Miami Beach or Doral will have an opportunity to weigh in on this. And I think the state of Florida wants to make sure that these are issues that if they're going to be dealt with locally, or on a voter referendum, that's how it happens.
Yeah. Chip, as you well know, the bill, the compact, also creates a Florida Gaming Control Commission, 5 members who would be paid $136,000 a year, a rather handsome salary. Who knows what they would do, because the Indian tribes are sovereign. This Gaming Commission investigators could not get into their casinos, could not see what's going on. So what's the point of this this commission?
Well, I disagree a little bit, Michael, on the fact that whether they can quote unquote get on the property. I think Jim Allen and the folks from both the tribe and the Hard Rock entity have been very, very open to sitting down. I believe in these conversations, they've had these conversations as well, that they will work with this gaming commission. If we're going to be, I've always said, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. We've already decided we're going to have the lottery and tribal gaming and paramutuals and other things. What we need to do in Florida is do it right. And so if we're going to do it right, we have to have a regulatory board, a gaming commission. I believe in this case, the way it's set up has specific qualifications for each member. You mentioned a salary. If it's something that's more of a full-time thing and not just service to the state of Florida, then it should be paid properly, and you get the right folks to do it. I know there was an accounting position, and there were other gaming experience type folks, but I believe the tribe will allow the interactivity of the state of Florida and this regulatory board.
You know, my impression was a lot of the responsibility of the commission was going to be policing off-reservation and non-tribal gaming, mm-hmm. because that is the reason that the Seminole tribe stopped paying on the last compact. Right. Figuring that some of these entities, the paramutuals, the card rooms, put in games that were supposed to be exclusive. Is that a component? That was kind of my impression. The commission is to police, sort of to make sure that the Seminole tribe remains having exclusivity.
Mm-hmm. You're correct, Lena. In other words, I believe the working relationship will be fine with the tribe, but this is also to look at the multitude of other off-site facilities, paramutuals, things like that. There are lots of conversations about this whole process of decoupling and having these games on other sites. And again, if the mobile sports wagering goes through the courts fine or is not challenged, that would also be able to be a function of these paramutuals, and they would have what's called a skin on a mobile app, so that if you're going to Calder, you could do it, or Gulfstream, or any of those other facilities we have here, and you could also partake in that same process.
Yeah, Chip, in the 45 seconds we have left here with you, let's just sort of get it out there politically. This is just a huge victory for Governor Ron DeSantis. He has done what former Governor Rick Scott could not do, reach this deal. This really puts him in a great position for re-election next year, does it not?
I think it's a win for the people of Florida. $6 billion will go a long way in addressing, continuing to address teacher salaries, our environment, all of the different things that we're dealing with in the state of Florida, education and the environment being two of the top issues. So I think it's a win for everyone politically. The governor made it a priority, but without the legislature going along with it, it would not have been a success. But he has shown time and time again that his relationship with the legislature is much, much different than in the past.
State Rep Chip LaMarca, great to have you, Republican from Lighthouse Point. Incidentally, great to have you aboard, and we'll be watching for sure.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Chip.
And up next, the concerns and debate that fueled the unsuccessful opposition to the compact.
Democratic State Representative Nick Durand of Miami is going to join us live. That is next. The gambling compact sailed through the legislature in record time, just 3 days, pushed across the finish line by Governor DeSantis and the Republican leadership.
Democrats tried to slow it down, offered several amendments without success. Representative Nicholas Durand of Miami was one of those taking the lead for House Democrats, and he's right there with us live via Zoom. Hi, great to have you here. I hope you were listening to your colleague Chip LaMarca, because we're going to quiz you on that.
Absolutely was. It's good to see you both.
Thank you very much, Representative. You know, let's just simply get you on the record. You were one of 17 members of the Florida House of Representatives who voted against the compact. Why did you vote against it?
Well, Michael, it's good to be with you again. I was one of the several members who voted against this compact for a couple of reasons. First, I think we have a compact that may very well violate Amendment 3, which takes away and the leverage of the people, voters, to say when and where and how we should allow the expansion of gambling. And the second is related to what I think is going to end up being not as good a deal, because this compact may not very well survive within both state and federal courts as they look at some of the violations that may very well happen because of some of the compact's provisions related to the sports betting. And I think those are some key reasons why myself and many others felt very concerned with what was presented to us.
So the sports betting, let's dive into that a little bit. You're talking about the servers are on the reservation, on tribal land, that in the compact, that's what makes them okay. But then anyone in Florida can use them anywhere, but the tribe is going to be sort of the monopoly shareholder and be the kind of, I call it hub and spoke, I guess, they're the hub. So in Amendment 3, which allows any gambling expansion to happen only when Florida voters vote for it, on something that's already legal in Florida. So a couple of questions in my question. Number one, sports betting is not legal in Florida, so that's that. And then number two, if it's Seminole Tribe gaming, voters don't have to vote on that expansion. So how do you see those things working legally?
So Glenna, the way I look at this is, like you just said it, you pointed it out a couple of things. First, if the Seminole tribe was able to do sportsbook only on their tribal land, meaning not only were the servers located on the property, but you physically will be there placing those bets, that wouldn't be in violation of Amendment 3. You'll be providing something to the Seminoles through what is the Indian Gaming Regulation Act and exclusivity that's able to be provided through those sorts of provisions. What happens here, though, is in a year from now, you and I, me down in Coconut Grove, we can go my daughter's winter winter festival show, and parents can be sitting in that show with their phone, placing bets. We are not on tribal land. You can be in Pensacola. You can be on the train, the Brightline train or the Virgin train going from here to West Palm Beach, placing bets while you're not on.
I hate to interrupt you, I'm sorry, but can I just say that happens now, only the servers are offshore and the bookies are offshore and people in Florida are mm-hmm. using them to place sports book that's illegal in Florida. And Florida and the tribe and we don't have the tax, don't have the compact, don't have the revenues or the returns. So that's reality, is it not?
Sort of. And the other thing to this, though, is that we have, as Floridians, voted in favor of ensuring that any gambling that happens here in the state of Florida is, if it is beyond tribal lands, it should be we should have the say on yes or no. So I think that's a critical piece to what we're talking about. And when we go to that, and when we go to what we're looking at federal and state laws, this will undoubtedly will be litigated. And it's the first bill in my 5 years in the House, in the legislature, where I hear folks in the who are voting yes saying there are aspects to this bill that are probably going to be litigated and struck out. And fundamentally what that means is that it changes the entirety of the deal itself. And so the question comes back to, is this a good enough deal for the state of Florida in the way that we have drafted this? And the potential impact from it. From my understanding, the estimates are close to $100 million that could be stricken from this total package each year just on the sports book.
Yeah. Representative Duran, let's talk about this magical 15-mile barrier that has been set up in the compact. Coincidentally, I would point out the Seminole tribe over at their casino in Tampa requires no gambling within 100 miles. But in this compact, it says from the Seminole Hard Rock, 15 miles, no gambling. It is possible beyond that. Well, 15.2 miles away is the Trump National Doral, and the Fontainebleau Hotel is about 15 miles as well. Now, the legislature, you asked, I know, in the debate in the legislature, that simply, if it's going to happen, would have to be done by a vote of the legislature, wouldn't it, to allow them to move a license to either Trump National Doral or the Fontainebleau?
Correct. And that was and has been a major concern for many of us from this delegation down in Miami-Dade. You saw myself, Representative Grieco, Representative Geller, all very concerned about this aspect because you said it in there, the language is particular. I think it's on page 58 of that compact that says 15 miles from this particular location. So a straight line from here to the Trump Doral Resort or straight line from here to from the location to the Fontainebleau is well beyond the 15-mile buffer. And every other piece of Seminole property outside of that is 100 miles. So it certainly it caused concern. Now, you just brought up an important point that and something that we had elicited through our questions during the debate and when it was presented is that does the legislature have to act in order for this new casino to actually be passed? Are zoning and zoning municipality rules and local ordinances still also a part of the barriers that have to be in place? And it is yes and yes to both of those questions. Now, here is my concern. Over the last several years, the legislature has looked at local power, local municipal power, and I think my friendship had brought it up. He is a fan of local control, and they have steadily taken away local control on many issues. And so now for the next 30 years, we have a compact that says a casino can go up if the legislature spoke and saw fit. And that is concerning to me. I think many of my constituents, our community in Miami-Dade, and a lot of folks around us.
Interesting point. Yeah. Nick, so this Jim Allen, who is the CEO of Tribal Gaming, during the hearing said something so interesting to me. He looked at the committee and he said, look, the tribe is the one taking the risk. We don't need the compact. We're mm-hmm. the ones taking the risk. The risk isn't to the state because if this falls apart, everything reverts to the 2010 compact and they're still paying the revenues, not nearly as many revenues, not nearly as much money. So in that sort of context, the tribe doesn't need the state. That I thought that was so interesting. What do you think about that?
So one, I don't begrudge the Seminoles and Jim Allen. I've met with them several times during the course of the last 2 weeks, and they are impressive in their negotiating skills and how they developed and built this out. And you're right, they are taking the ultimate gamble. They believe that they will ultimately prevail in courts, wherever the court fight may be, or that the Department of Interior will feel and see that the rules as and the compact as drafted will pass muster. And I think it's because you look at the sports book and you look at how much potential funding is there. It is worth the gamble on their end to try to make that happen. This is, we had changed, we had amended the compact. Remember, on Monday we showed up and they had taken out online betting, and we had taken and we had extended the October to the initiation and start of online sports book to October. And honestly, I think that in many respects it's weird to see this piece stick around. It is a bet, and it's a worthwhile bet because they know the market is the potential that is there, and for them to have a 30-year exclusivity deal is just worth the try.
Representative Nick Durant, great to have you on the show. We'll see you back here, I hope, soon. Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thanks
good to
so
be
much.
With you both.
And next, to the moon, Alice, and Mars, and more. NASA's new boss is Florida's former senator and one-time astronaut.
Bill Nelson is facing new horizons and stiff competition in space. He is going to join us live next.
Upon which I am about to enter.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. Administrator. Congratulations.
There is a new boss at the National Aeronautic and Space Administration, NASA, probably one of the coolest departments in the federal government.
Is it ever? And it is poised to put people back on the moon and partner with commercial space exploration like SpaceX. And the U.S. also is facing serious competition in the space race. Bill Nelson is NASA's new administrator, former Florida senator, one of two members in Congress ever to fly in a space shuttle. And he joins us now. Looking pretty darn good for 78 there, Senator. You are admirable.
Well,
I bet you could drop down and give us 50 push-ups right now.
Well, I can try, but Michael, I'd say you're looking pretty good at 78 also.
And what am I, a chopped liver? What about me? So what do we call you, Senator or Administrator? What do we call you now?
Just call me Bill.
Okay, and, perfect.
It's great to see you guys. I've missed you. So now you can interrogate me again.
Bill, we're so glad that you are with us. All right, you're sworn in May 3rd. You are, of course, an experienced about space. I mean, you flew on that space mission. You were a payload specialist, not sure exactly what that is. But give us your vision of what you want NASA to accomplish.
Well, NASA is this great little can-do agency that breaks down barriers. We are exploring the heavens with humans and machines. And don't forget the first A in NASA, which is aeronautics. We are developing an electric airplane that will have no pollution whatsoever. So there are a lot of exciting things. We're going back to the moon with first man, with the first woman and the next person of color. We are going to bring back samples from Mars with the rover that's up there now. We're doing all kinds of science. We're going to put up an observatory called the James Webb Telescope later this year, and it's going to be 1,000,000 miles out from Earth.
Wow.
At a neutrally buoyant place, and it's going to look out into the heavens almost back into the beginning of light from the Big Bang.
Okay, so after talking about all of the things going on in Washington Earth-based drama, that sounds like pretty high in the sky, but it costs money. And I think, Bill, most of the people watching news now are hearing about Elon Musk and SpaceX, and mm-hmm. there's this big collaboration now between NASA and, you know, respectfully, there is the Space Launch System that's over budget and over time, and now you have these hotshot techie guys with lots of money putting rockets on the launch pads. Talk about how NASA and this commercial component are going forward.
When Senator Hutchinson and I drew the bill up 11 years ago, we knew that what we needed to do was to get the commercial sector involved even though they had always done the contracts for NASA, but we needed to let them loose to the potential of their creativity. And this is what we're seeing, that companies like SpaceX are doing these incredible things. So as we go on out into the cosmos, we're going to have them do the landing on the moon, of course, with considerable NASA supervision because of the safety of the astronauts. And what we are finding is that we can bring the cost down. So SpaceX got a contract to do a lander. Now, NASA is going to get the crew out there to lunar orbit, and then they'll exchange into the lander and go down. That SpaceX contract is a fixed price contract. And we've seen, those overruns in the past because space is hard. So we're trying to be very mindful of those appropriations.
Yeah, Bill, last weekend, the Chinese put a rover craft on Mars. You congratulated them. But you also said that we're in a, quote, very aggressive competition with China. Sort of expand on that. What is our relationship in space with China?
China is getting ready to put three missions at the south pole of the moon. That's where the frozen water is. If you can get water, you can immediately turn it into fuel and oxygen. What we better watch out is that China doesn't get there, claiming to be an international mission, and suddenly say, they are staking it out. We're going to the South Pole as well, but China has also said that they're going to land humans on the moon. Just watch. Will they suddenly try to beat us back to the moon? We could have another space race.
Right.
The space race that I think a lot of people are used to hearing is with Russia, not China. In the short time we have with you, the International Space Station is sort of one of those, global kumbaya, everyone gets along, we're all looking in the same direction, we're all working for humankind. But there's some future changes coming to the International Space Station, and I wonder if you would explain if that whole concept is changing.
There are 18 countries that have participated in the International Space Station. Russia built the station with us. They have been our solid partner. Russia and China are talking about they're going back to the moon together. We got to watch out for this changing new dynamic. I think there's a lot more that you can say about you're going to do something than doing it. And we certainly hope the Russians are going to continue to be our partners.
Yeah, to say the obvious, Bill, but what is at stake here, among other things, is national security. What happens in space has a huge bearing on the security of our beloved country.
Michael, that's exactly right. And that's why we never want to cede the high ground to anybody else. NASA, and for that matter, the security interest of the United States government, have got to keep pressing outward to protect ourselves. Look what space does for us every day. Not only our weather satellites and
Senator, we are out of time, but it's great seeing you again.
Fascinating stuff.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again.
With more time.
Okay.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Great to be with you this hour. Remember, we're online 24/7 at local10.com.
And remember, stay informed, get involved. Have a great Sunday.